Now Jeff Blair can tell you bedtime stories. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher and listen anytime you want. Sweet dreams. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. We're always taking callers for him to hang up on. This is The Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Matt Devlin, the TV play-by-play voice of the Raptors, will join us at 10:15. The Raptors beating Maccabi Haifa 92-85 last night in a preseason game, despite allowing a 21-zip second-half run. The regular season's got to the regular season can't start too soon. It really can't. Renal Lavoie, regular Thursday insider from Tavia Sports, will join us at 10:40. We'll ask Renal a question about those Edmonton Oilers. Were we a little hasty in criticizing them? And Greg Wyshynski, Senior Puck Daddy, will join us later on. We'll talk a little NFL football with Troy Rank. Covers the Broncos for the Denver Post. The Broncos welcome the Chargers to Mile High Stadium for tonight's, for the Thursday Nighter, an AFC West matchup. Want to continue our discussion about the World Series. By now you know the Kansas City Royals putting the boots to the San Francisco Giants 7-2. A rare bullpen implosion on the part of the Giants. The series now goes back to San Francisco. Game 3 is tomorrow night, which we'll have on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And on Sportsnet, I was looking at Sportsnet Ontario. It'll be Jeremy Guthrie on the mound for the Royals against Tim Hudson for the Giants. Cliff Corcoran is SI.com's MLB writer, and Cliff Corcoran joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. So, Cliff, thank you, first of all, for doing this. What do the Royals have to do to build on this win?
Well, the key thing that happened for them yesterday was getting big hits with runners in scoring position. Their offense came back alive. In the three games prior to that, they didn't have a single hit with runner in scoring position, and they had scored a total of 5 runs. And they managed to win 2 of those games by 2-1 scores against the Orioles. That was by the quality of their pitching, obviously the big arms in their bullpen. But then, of course, one of those games was pitched by Madison Bumgarner, who hasn't given up very many runs at all. But the fact that they had no hits with runners in scoring position, and again, they had the solo home run from Perez in game 1, and that was it. That was a big change in game 2, that they were able to come through third time through the order. I think Bochy mismanaged his bullpen in the 6th inning there, which helped. But even before that, they got, Billy Butler had the big hit. They had a couple big hits. It seemed like they were actually doing the exact opposite. Every time they got a man in a scoring position, they came up with a big hit. They need to keep doing that. That's kind of obvious. You need to score runs. But the big change between game 1 and game 2, and really between the last 3 games and game 2, was them coming through on offense.
And Cliff, one of the reasons that I called the Giants to win the series, I still think they're going to win the series. But the one thing I didn't want to see, and I know you covered some of these series, my concern was after the first game that we were seeing a repeat of the 06 Tigers, the 2008 Razor, I guess. Most famously for a lot of us, or infamously for a lot of us, the 07 Rockies, where a team goes on a run and all of a sudden you just get the deer in the headlights look, and the World Series becomes just sort of almost like a victory lap for the other team. And I was watching after game one, and I was thinking to myself, okay, this the Royals have lived a pretty charmed existence. This is where the ride ends. And I think for a lot of people, I don't know if a lot of people are surprised the Royals won game two, but I guarantee you a lot of people are surprised they won the way they won. I mean, really ripping into a Giants bullpen that's been really, really good in the postseason.
Well, there's a couple things. First off, the question that I've been asked the most during this Royals run is what happens when they finally lose a game? Can they rebound? And I've said time and again that I think that this team, you know, what's most impressed me about this Royals team is that from the wild card game on, they have not seemed fazed by the postseason. I don't see the pressure getting to them. Now, obviously, as the wins piled up, there's less and less pressure. But, you know, even in that wild card game, they stayed loose. They fell behind. They came back. They, you know, tied up, came back. So I did not think that the single loss was going to shake them, and obviously it didn't. With regard to the Giants' bullpen, you know, Bruce Bochy brought in his worst relievers last night. You know, he had a tie game in the World Series in the sixth inning. And, you know, it's kind of fascinating because by reputation, Bruce Bochy is a far better manager than Ned Yost. But Yost has done a fantastic job with his bullpen, with the exception of the Ventura incident in the wild card game, making sure he gets straight to his best arms. And Bochy yesterday, with two runners on base, no outs, sixth inning tie game World Series, went to a couple of guys who have not pitched well for him at all. Mm-hmm. Gene Machi has not pitched well since June. He's given up two home runs in two home runs in something like two and a third innings in this postseason, and had really been left unused because of that. That's the guy you go to right away, and then after that you bring in Hunter Strickland, who's given up. Now, I know Strickland had the good inning in garbage time the night before, but four home runs in five innings, because he had the extra inning in game one. You know, he went to his two worst arms. You're in a jam in a tie game in the World Series on the road. You have to bring in one of your high leverage guys there. That's my personal opinion. Get out of the jam, and then if you want to, I still think it would be a bad idea, but if you want to go to some of the softer parts of your bullpen, you know, with nobody on base to start a new inning, sure, give it a shot. If that guy runs into trouble, you go back. You know, he eventually wound up using five relievers in that inning, and he wound up with Jeremy Affeldt, who's probably the guy I would have gone to start with, because Affeldt he's a lefty, but he doesn't have platoon problems.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, this year he was actually better against righties than against lefties. He's kind of that, you know, first line of defense, give you maybe more than three outs type of guy for the sixth inning. You know, I mean, if you really want to get hardcore about kind of the sabermetric ideals, you maybe in that sixth inning you go to your best guy. Maybe
mm-hmm.
you go to Romo or Casilla, because that could be the game, and it was. But at the very least, go to somebody like Affeldt, and he didn't. He went to the worst guys in his pen, and he paid for it.
Yeah, it was. You know, we've made this point going into the series. It was rare to see Bruce Bochy, who normally not only pushes the right buttons but gets them in order. It was rare to see him be in a situation where he just didn't have any answers. And you know, now he's got. I mean, we believe Tim Lincecum's hurt. You talked about Gene Machi. I don't know how much confidence you can have in him. I don't know when he uses Hunter Strickland again, Cliff, unless another garbage time situation shows up. I mean, he's kind of back to his guys, right? Casilla, Romo, Lopez, Affeldt still there, and of course, Yusmeiro Pettit. So he still has options, but the way Bruce Bochy likes to use his bullpen, he needs as many options as he can possibly have.
Yeah, well, you know, Pettit's an interesting case there. I think Pettit's a guy, because he gave him those six innings in the 18-inning game against the Nationals, and because he was their fifth starter, really, after Lincecum got pulled from the rotation, I think he was thinking, you know, I'm not going to use Pettit for a short outing. But
mm-hmm.
Pettit has been outstanding. He hasn't given up. He's basically pitched a shutout in the, across two outings, but nine scoreless innings in the postseason. You know, I mean, And I wrote before the series started, you know, Jay Jaffe and I did the position-by-position breakdown on the two teams, and I argued with Jay to get the bullpens even, because those guys you named, Casillo, Romo, Afel, Lopez, and Pettit, pitched exactly as many innings as Holland, Davis, Herrera, and Jason Frazier, and gave up fewer runs. They were actually better in the postseason to this point than the vaunted big three, plus I threw Frazier in there because he had three and a third scoreless innings and evened out the innings. this postseason, those Giants were, those five Giants relievers actually pitched better, but he didn't use any of them there. So, but yeah, now he's backed himself into a corner. Now it's 1-1. It's still early in the series. A lot can go on. But yeah, Strickland's a guy you can't trust. Lincecum may be hurt. And Machi, again, you don't really trust him either. So, but he's still got five arms. So the question is, yesterday, why didn't he go to one of those five arms? Well, he paid for it, and maybe going forward he won't.
So
he won't go to the other guys.
With the series shifting back to San Francisco, the DH is not in play. It's doubtful that Billy Butler gets in the lineup. I can't see any way that he gets in the lineup, frankly. He'll probably be reduced to a pinch-hitting role. Who is to step up in the absence of Billy Butler, especially considering he's kind of picked his spots during the postseason. He hasn't had the greatest postseason of anybody, but he's come through with some important at-bats and some important hits for them.
Yeah, that's absolutely the description of his postseason. The hits that he's had have been big, and we saw him get two of them last night. Coming into the series, I said basically that, you know, that he didn't, yeah, despite the big hits that he's gotten, he hasn't necessarily been swinging a hot bat, but you see how important those hits were last night. Mm. So that is going to be a big loss. I think the guy that needs to step up, obviously on some level it's Hosmer, because he's the guy blocking Butler from first base, although really you don't want Billy Butler playing first base in a World Series game,
right,
regardless, just because of the quality of his defense. But I think it's also Alex Gordon. Alex Gordon didn't get a hit last night, if I remember correctly. Yeah, he was 0-for-4 last night. Gordon has gotten some huge hits for them along this run. I think Gordon's the guy who, you know, he's going to move up a spot in the order most likely, unless they decide to leapfrog Perez, who actually does have a couple big hits. He was cold all postseason, but got the home run in game one, the big double yesterday. If they decide to try to keep the righty-lefty thing going, leapfrog Perez over Gordon into Butler's spot, still, I think Gordon's the guy. And then again, maybe Perez is the guy, because like I said, he's got the two big hits. Maybe his bat is coming around. Maybe Perez is the guy they can lean on a little bit there. But it's that part of the order that Butler is being pulled from, the Hosmer, Butler, Gordon, Perez sequence kind of in the middle there. And that's where you're going to need one or two of those other guys to step up.
Yeah, it would be interesting if this series came down to a battle of catchers between Sal Perez and Buster Posey. We kind of look for that in World Series. We kind of look for the head-to-head matchup or the position-to-position matchup. And I think we look at Buster Posey. He's kind of the last man standing. He's sort of the last, I guess, the last superstar or the last sort of, the last superstar player in the World Series right now. It'd be fascinating to see Sal Perez and him kind of go head-to-head.
It would be. But Posey, you know, was actually my pick for the, because I like you, I picked the Giants. On paper, you kind of almost have to pick the Giants. But again, that's why they play the games. And I figured, well, hey, Posey would be a good choice for an MVP there, because I made me pick somebody. but Posey hasn't really been all that. He's gotten some singles. I don't think he has an extra base hit yet this postseason. He didn't do much last night, or the night before, really, even despite the run outburst in game one. I don't see the one thing about catchers in the postseason, and it was one thing that was being said about Perez before those two big hits, is that, you know, a catcher wears down over the course of the season. It's one reason why Joe Mauer's batting titles were so surprising, is that but you look back in like a guy like Jorge Posada, who played in a ton of postseasons, he was pretty much lousy in most of them, because over the course of the season, a catcher wears down. He takes so much abuse to his hands and his body. Even Yadier Molina, before he pulled the hamstring, now of course he had the thumb surgery, but he wasn't hitting much. And Molina's history of postseasons, he did have the big home run against the Mets, but generally not good. You don't see much from catchers in the postseason for those reasons. then again, you know, I mean, I can keep naming names. You go back to a guy like Thurman Munson, who had some very big postseasons. You know, two games in, I'd be surprised to see Posey really come up and make a big impact. But like you say, he is the best player on either one of these teams at this point, and the one superstar. You know, Bumgarner is really making a name for himself, and has been for years now. He's only just 25, though. He's kind of been the breakout star of this postseason, but Posey's really the estate. You know, he's got the MVP, he's got the Rookie of the Year, he's got the two titles already, which of course Bumgarner does too. You know, but I don't necessarily see that happening in terms of Posey breaking out, but he is the best player on either of these teams.
Cliff, it was good of you to join us today. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
It's Cliff Corcoran. He is SI.com's MLB writer. You can follow him on Twitter at Cliff Corcoran. Normally we tweet out the Twitter handles of our guests. That was my bad today. I dropped the ball, Travis. I dropped the ball. Raptors. Well, it's what they got. They have one game left, one preseason game left against the New York Knicks tomorrow night. And then finally we can get the regular season started. It's a regular season that a lot of us have, as I've said, a lot of us have looked forward to for a while. This is a much anticipated NBA season in Toronto. The buzz around this team, and rightfully so, is remarkable. And a lot of people expect good things out of the Raptors this year. General manager survey, a couple of publications have done them. People are picking, general managers are picking the Raptors to once again win the Atlantic Division. I think they're going to have a terrific year. And but at the same time, man, it just seems like the NBA preseason goes on forever and ever and ever. So as we said, the Raps have one more game left, one more preseason game left. It'll be against the New York Knicks. Pretty much, I think, one position battle left on the team. I think that's pretty much the best way to put it. I think a lot of people think that Greg Stiemsma has the upper hand in that. But let's ask Matt Devlin, the TV play-by-play voice of the Raptors. How you doing, Mr. Devlin?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, but man, I want the regular season to start, Matt.
Well, you and me both. I agree with Tony Parker, who said that he believes it should be a four-game preseason and then extend the season by those 2 weeks, and I think that you'd see better basketball and less, obviously, back-to-backs. And I completely agree. Jeff, as you well know in covering sports, players come to camp now in shape, ready to go. And at this stage of the game, everybody is just fearful of an injury.
Yeah, and it's funny because the person that kind of first told me about this, I can remember when Felipe Alou managed the Montreal Expos, one of his lines was, After the first day of spring training, the writers would gather around him and he'd say, well, it can only go downhill from here. The only thing that happens now is somebody gets hurt before opening day. And that's what he said. That's all we want to do is get through without somebody being injured. There really is just one spot available in this team. Is there not right now?
Yes, there is. I mean, you have three players. You have Will Cherry, Jordan Hamilton, and then Greg Stiemsma. I think everybody agrees that Will Cherry's not going to be in the mix. However, Jordan Hamilton, you know, has been a player that, you know, has really had a good training camp as well as preseason. But I think you lean toward a Greg Stiemsma. He's a veteran big. He's played in Boston and Minnesota. He's played overseas. And he is somebody that you could see, you know, actually getting some minutes depending upon what happens, you know, with Jonas Valanciunas. Now, clearly you can slide, as they did last night, James Johnson to the four and Amir Johnson to the five. But he is that extra big body. So it does come down to Stiemsma or Hamilton, so it appears. And, you know, that could be a difficult decision.
One of the things that Dwayne Casey has said since the start of training camp, one of the things he wanted to work on, well, there were a couple of things, but he wanted to work on the team's three-point efficiency. But he also talked about decision-making down the stretch. And we had Kyle Lowry on yesterday, Matt, and I asked him, I don't know how much you can quote-unquote work on stuff down the stretch in the preseason. I mean, I guess you can take a snippet of the game if you're up by 1 point with a minute left in the first half or something like that. You can maybe pretend it's the final minute of the game. But Kyle Lowry also said, and I take him at his word, he also said that he thought that he has seen some improvement. There are things there that suggest to him that this team will be able to make better decisions late in the game, up by a point, down by 2 points, whatever, possession of the ball, 17 seconds left. Have you seen anything that suggests to you that this team is going to be better at that point in the game than last year's team?
Well, I think that the one thing that I've noticed right off of the bat has been a calm confidence, Jeff. You know, there is just the knowledge of having been there before. And I think that goes a long way, you know, with this team. Because prior to this past season, the reality of it is a core group of these players had not been in a Game 7 before. And so I think that they understand now what exactly it takes. Now, you know, in talking to the coaches, it's not as if they've shown everything that they have done during training camp. They're working on things in training camp that they're just not going to show in a game during the preseason. And the reason why is they don't want it on tape. They don't want anybody else to see exactly what some of the new wrinkles are. And that's understandable. Every single team does it, you know, that way. And so while you and I may not have been able to see some of the new wrinkles, you know, on a game in and game out basis, when it comes to late clock situations, they are working diligently on that at practice.
Matt Devlin joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. I know this is kind of difficult to project because a lot of it, frankly, is going to depend on particular circumstances, a particular game. But how many minutes could you see Lou Williams playing for this team on average?
Well, I think a lot of it's going to depend upon matchups, game situation. And earlier in the preseason, we did have an opportunity, Jeff, to see him operate against Boston in the fourth quarter, where he scored 11 of his 12 points. And that is something that he is capable of doing. And I think that he's a guy that's willing to take the big shot at the end of the game. So, you know, while he didn't play last night, they're resting him. I do believe that given, you know, certain matchups that you will see him out there and you will potentially see him, you know, playing alongside even a Kyle as well as DeMar. I mean, that was one of the things last year, you know, that really developed. Obviously, Gravis playing with Kyle playing off of the ball, and having Lou Williams in the backcourt now, too, really gives Dwayne Casey and his coaching staff a lot of different options. And they would ride, you know, heavy minutes in that third quarter with Kyle as well as DeMar. And so the question then becomes, you know, are they going to then, you know, look at Lou Williams and Gravis in those periods? So it'll be interesting to see kind of, you know, how that all unfolds.
Matt, one of our favorites in this show, John Schumann, has done a couple of surveys, spoken to league GMs, Travis McKenzie pointing this out to me. And it seems as if the feeling around the NBA is that Jonas Valanciunas is poised to take a big step forward this year. That's probably not a news flash. I think a lot of us feel that way. I think a lot of us, frankly, are really, really hoping that happens because I would love to see Jonas Valanciunas at his peak level. I think he'd be so much fun to be around. He'd be so much fun to watch. Any difference you're noticing in Jonas Valanciunas this camp compared to last year or the end of the season even?
Yes, well, this is one of the things that I would caution everyone on, that he's still only 21 years of age, 22 years of age, and it does take time for a player to develop when you're specifically talking about bigs. And then also, you couple that with a team that is guard-oriented, wing-oriented, and so I really think the major step for Jonas, Jeff, in this upcoming season is from a mindset where he understands that if he can go out and get rebounds, he's going to get his offensive productivity through offensive rebounds, and he's also going to get his rebounding numbers through going and getting the ball off the glass at the defensive end. And I think that's one of the reasons why you have Dwayne Casey talking about the defensive presence that he wants to see from Jonas. Now, every now and again, you know, as Pat Riley used to say about, you know, Patrick Ewing, he'd allow Patrick to take those 15-footers and stuff because he called it a cookie. Hey, if you're willing to work hard for me underneath the basket and you're willing to work hard not only at the defensive end but also on the glass on the offensive end, then I'm going to allow for you to do that. And Kyle Lowry, DeMar DeRozan, they certainly recognize that. But in my mind, I really believe that Jonas Valanciunas should average a double-double, and he could average a double-double by taking 5 or 6 shots. Go get the offensive rebound, get the putback. You can get fouled. He's an excellent free-throw shooter. And those are the sort of things that I want to see him really take that next step with.
Matt, it was good of you to join us as always. I'll see you tomorrow night. And, man, I can't wait. Can't wait for the regular season Wednesday night against Atlanta. Looking forward to it.
Likewise, and real quick, Jeff, I just want to say, you know, obviously yesterday what happened in Ottawa, as, you know, somebody that has lived here now for 7 years, my heart goes out to everyone affected by that, and certainly the fine young man, soldier, who lost his life from Hamilton.
Matt, appreciate the sentiment. Thanks so much.
Yeah.
It's Matt Devlin. He is Raptors TV play-by-play voice on Sportsnet. And Matt Devlin, been here for 7 years, and a member of the community. Kids play hockey, and nice sentiment from Matt, and I'm sure it'll be shared by a lot of people. Renaud Lavoie is our regular Thursday NHL insider. He is, of course, the NHL insider as well for TVA Sports. You can follow him on Twitter at Ren Lavoie TVA. And you have to, because, you know, you, they're go-to guys in every sport, right? And Ren Lavoie is very much a go-to guy. I mean, they're insiders, and then they're insiders, and then they're insiders. And Ren Lavoie is an insider. He will join us at 10:40. We will talk about the still red-hot Montreal Canadiens. Just how good can this team be? And we'll also ask a question I think a lot of people around hockey are asking right now. Did we, were we too quick to dismiss the Edmonton Oilers? Ren Lavoie joins us when the Jeff Blair Show continues right here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, the NHL postponed the Maple Leafs game in Ottawa last night, and rightly so. That game has not yet been rescheduled. The 3 games on tap in the NHL tonight, including the Pittsburgh Penguins and the Detroit Red Wings and Vancouver and St. Louis, as well as the Islanders and Boston. Oh, and Chicago's in Nashville. And Arizona's in Minnesota. I love the NHL website. I'm just poking along. Carolina's in Calgary. pardon me. Renaud Lavoie is our NHL insider on from TVA Sports. He is our regular Thursday insider. And he joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. How you doing, Renaud?
I'm good. You, Jeff?
I'm doing well. I'm just having fun with the NHL website, just trying to figure out how many games are tonight. I could probably have it printed out in front of me, but that would be way, way too common sensible. Got to ask you about the Edmonton Oilers. Were we too quick to judge the Oilers?
Well, you know what? I was surprised last night.
Yeah, you and me both, my friend.
Yeah, the thing is, Tampa, the Lightning right now, they are struggling because they have a lot of injuries on key players. Mm-hmm. So I expected a different challenge versus the Capitals, and I was not impressed at all. I know Ovechkin had only maybe one shot in the third or something like his first shot in the third period. In the first two, I'm not going to say he was struggling, but he was not the same player as he used to be. And but the bottom line, you need to give a lot of credit to the Edmonton Oilers young players. Again, they played well last night. They didn't look bad defensively. And I'm convinced in a way that the Capitals decided, I'm not going to say they thought that it will be easy, but at the same time, it was kind of a day off, a night off for them. I didn't see a team that was able to create they weren't able to create anything offensively, mm-hmm. really. And normally, that's where teams are having success in Edmonton because they spend so much time in the in the offensive zone. And defensively, the Oilers are not able to battle, but it wasn't the case last night. So you know what? I'm pretty sure today when the Capitals players are going to wake up, they're going to be a little disappointed again because that was 2 points that normally that was an easy 2 points for them last night.
You know, Renaud, we look at the Oilers. We know about the young forwards. I think most people in the NHL have put two and two together and come to the conclusion that the Oilers at some point are going to have to move one of those forwards in order in order to add some experience or frankly, add an experienced goaltender. With your knowledge of where teams are right now around the NHL, with the salary cap, things of that nature, how realistic is it for the Oilers to expect to be able to find a market for one of those young forwards?
You know what? I think it's there, to be honest with you. That's my understanding this week. And that's what I've learned this week is there's some teams who are looking right now at Yakupov.
Mm-hmm.
And Neil Yakupov, I watched him again last night. You know what? He's a player that I really think can help a hockey team. I understand that there's some flaws in his game, but you know what? Those things happen. He needs to be coached well. He needs to be in a place where he's going to be happy, where he's going to feel like people are working with him and not maybe against him. And I feel that the Oilers, I'm not going to say they are prepared right now to trade him, but they have to listen to offers. There's no doubt about that. And I'm looking at the Maple Leafs right now. I wonder if James Reimer is the solution for the Edmonton Oilers.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I don't think it's a surprise for anybody here The Maple Leafs, they looked around. They kicked tires during the summer to see if anybody was interested in James Reimer. But at the same time, they don't want to give James Reimer for no reason.
Mm-hmm.
But is there a fit there? The Maple Leafs GM was in Edmonton last week. Obviously, he was there for a reason. He wasn't in Edmonton to see if the weather was good or not. So you look at those things, 1 + 1 still equals 2. But mm-hmm. I wonder if I'm going to say I think Yakupov could be a great fit in Toronto. The question is it James Reimer, is it a good fit in Edmonton? And that's maybe the question mark right now. We'll see. But I'm convinced that it's not going to be James Reimer for Neil Yakupov. There will be obviously more players if that trade can happen. I'm not saying it will happen, but obviously there's some discussions. But you know what? There's some discussions every day between GMs, and a lot of times, you know, like me, nothing happens.
So
It's going to be interesting. But I feel Yakupov, there'll be some teams who are going to look at him and say, you know what? We're ready to get that player on our team.
What type of team does he need to go to be successful?
You know what? A team with a big structure.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the and I'm not going to say he's going to go play for the Red Wings, but look at the Red Wings right now.
Right.
This, I mean, they were at the Bell Center this week, and it's impressive to see that team play. To be honest with you, they are well prepared. They are really doing the right things on the ice. But at the same time, you have a lot of money right now not playing. I'm looking at Steve Weiss,
mm-hmm.
not playing. My God, that guy's making close to $5 million per season.
Mm-hmm.
Played only one game this year. I don't understand why he's not playing, but at the same time, is it going to stay that way all year long? Something's going to happen with him. There's no doubt in my mind something's going to happen with him. But the young kids on that team were able to obviously take his spot. Now I see Yakupov not necessarily playing in Detroit, but why not in Toronto? Tell me why it wouldn't work in Toronto in the system they have right now. They are better defensively. There's a better structure there. They need, I think, more skill offensively in this, at the same time. That's a place where potentially maybe he could go, but hey, who knows? Honestly, the bottom line for me, Jeff, he needs to play on a mm-hmm. team where there's a good structure, and that's not on every team right now in the NHL. You know that there are some flaws in a lot of teams, but listen, Toronto could be a good fit. I would love to see him play with the Maple Leafs.
Ren Olivois joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. One thing we know about the Leafs, there's a need for more. I was going to say top six forwards. There really is. At the end of the day, I look at this team, and even if David Booth was healthy, I just don't think there's enough skill there. And the bottom line, Ren, I just don't think that from the top of that team to the bottom, there's enough skill.
Yeah, you need pure skill. The NHL changed a lot. Neil Yakupov is playing obviously in the Western Conference. It's really tough to play there. There's not a lot of space on the ice. Everybody knows that. You come in the East, there's more space. It's more offensively oriented, offense-oriented, I think, right now than it was before. And if you want to play versus those Montreal Canadiens teams, you need to be fast and you need to be skilled. And the time where you have those big, tall forward that can't skate, well, what's going to happen is the best forward are going to skate around those players.
Mm-hmm.
Look at what the Boston Bruins did. They made a few changes, but this is a faster team today that a year ago. Am I saying it's a better team right now? I don't know. It's still early in the season, but it's a faster team today than it was a year ago. And they had to do it because it's not only Montreal, it's around the league. You need faster players. You need skill. You need pure skill. And that, I think that's the way to go. And that's why Montreal is winning right now, because to be honest, Jeff, 5 years ago, Or 5 to 10 years ago, do you expect a guy like David Darnett to be the number one center on a hockey team?
No.
It's impossible. It's impossible. It would have been impossible. And now you look at David Darnett, nobody's saying a bad word against the guy because he's playing well. He's creating his own space on the ice. He's feeding Max Pacioretty. He's feeding Brendan Gallagher. Things are going well for that line, and things are going well for the second line in Montreal. Those two lines are really, really dangerous right now. So, and obviously, you need to have six really skilled forward up front. The third line in Montreal, you have René Bock. René Bock can score a goal. It's not happening this year so far, but I'm pretty sure the third line will find a way. You have Lars Seller, same thing for him, struggling in a way, but he'll find a way. And now you have Jiří Sakac, who's playing as the right winger on that line. They put Dale Weiss versus Detroit 2 days ago.
Mm-hmm.
Is it the solution? I don't know. But at the same time, a guy like Sakac got a lot of skills. So they build that team around skills. When you look at the forwards defensively, they have now Gilbert, who can, you know, make a good pass, a good first pass, maybe less. His awareness defensively is not like Josh Georges. Josh Georges was better defensively, but at the same time, the transition game is so important for the Montreal Canadiens that they decide that, you know what, if we're not as good defensively, we need to have a better transition game, and that's why they pick a guy like Gilbert.
And Renaud, the other thing I've noticed, it seems like Alexi Yamalin has really become an important part of that team, and he's sort of in the center of a lot of good stuff when that team plays well, isn't he?
Oh, you're totally right, and you just nailed it. Because I remember he was injured, and the team was winning. And there was that game, that first game in Montreal versus Boston, and he went back. And I think everybody saw the hit he gave on Milan Lucic mm-hmm. to start the first period, and it gave the tone to the game. And he's a horse right there. You really, really need a defenseman like him. And I think the Canes, they need to be praised to make sure that he'll stay with the team on a long-term contract. Obviously, there was a decision to be made between Josh Georges and Alexi Yamalin. Josh Georges is an unbelievable guy. He's blocking tons of shots, but obviously, physically, he's not as strong as Alexi Yamalin. So, the decision was made right there, and it was the right decision. You have a guy like Mike Weaver too, who's not the toughest. I'm not going to say the toughest. He's a tough kid. He's not the strongest guy, the biggest guy on the ice, but he's blocking a ton of shots. He's not scared of anybody, and he's a great, great, great team guy. So, you have a perfect fit right now defensively, because you have a good mix of transition players that can do the right thing offensively, and you have those guys who defensively in their zone, they can do a lot of good things.
Renaud, I appreciate you joining us today.
Well, it was fun. Hopefully things are going to go well for the Leafs this week. I guess Toronto will, the Maple Leafs fan will be happy.
No, we'll never be happy, Renaud. Yeah, come on.
Hey. Got to be happy. Big win in New York Islanders the other night. Huge win, and I was impressed by the way they played.
Yeah, they did. They did play very well, and kind of got I think a few indications of what this team can do offensively when it skates.
Yeah, it's that exactly that way that they need to play. They need faster players, and if they're going in that direction, I really think that the Maple Leafs are going to be dangerous. I put that team in the playoffs this season. I won't change my mind.
Renaud, good to talk to you. Have a great weekend.
You too, Jeff. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That is Renaud Lavoie, NHL insider from TVA Sports. Yeah, Renaud talks to people. You got people walking into the building listening to it here, and they're smiling, they're laughing. It's great fun. He's been a terrific. No surprise, I've known him for a while. I've known his work for a while, so it's no surprise. But he's been a terrific addition. He's a star, folks, and stars going to only shine brighter in the years to come. One of our other favorites, Greg Wyshynski, or as I refer to him, Senor Puck Daddy. You know him from his work on the Puck Daddy blog and Yahoo Sports. He is also the co-host of the Merrick versus Wyshynski podcast. Is it just me or is Merrick everywhere? Merrick's everywhere. I turn around and Merrick's there. And he's hosting Thursday Night Hockey. I mean, I don't want to say that he's everywhere, but I swear to God that the guy that served me coffee at Timmy's this morning, I swear to God it was Merrick. Guy had the tats and everything. Greg Wyshynski is the co-host of that podcast, and Greg Wyshynski will join us. We'll take a look at the early season surprises and the early season disappointments in the NHL. And Troy Rank, the Denver Broncos beat writer for the Denver Post, will join us as well. We'll get you set for the Thursday night football game. All that ahead in the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.